Here's a listener email that came in yesterday. Chris Grimm of Westport, Connecticut writes, I know the election is over, but where are Brooks and Dionne? My Friday evening commute is less pleasant without their insightful commentaries. So here to bring enlightenment to everyone stuck on the Merritt Parkway are David Brooks of the New York Times and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post. Welcome to both of you.
That's a lot of people stuck on the Merritt Parkway.
It is. And we're
bless that emailer.
I'm going to start with you by playing for you something Barack Obama said today in a 90-second taped video message.
In the coming years, my administration will bring a fresh perspective on America's role and responsibilities around the world. But if we are to truly meet our shared challenges, we must all work together.
I could tell you that he was talking about Hillary Clinton becoming Secretary of State, but it would be a lie.
By uniting the world in a peaceful celebration of human achievement, the Olympic Games reminds us that this is possible.
Yeah, the art of the possible in this instance was pitching Chicago's case to host the Summer Olympics in 2016. But let's stick with the other possibility. EJ, first of all, Secretary of State Clinton in the Obama administration.
You know, from her point of view, what this may reflect is that we've forgotten how important this job has been in our history and that she wants to be a George Marshall kind of Secretary of State. Remember, it's the Marshall Plan, not the Truman Plan. A lot of very important figures in our history, Henry Kissinger, John Hay, William Seward, have had that job. And I think that she decided that it would take years to build up the kind of influence she wanted in the Senate. For Barack Obama, he is much taken by this team of rivals concept that Doris Kearns Goodwin put forward. He's got Biden, who ran against him as vice president, mm-hmm. Richardson now at Commerce, Clinton as Secretary of State. Maybe Dennis Kucinich will become head of the Peace Corps. But he's clearly bringing in every part of the party, especially those who ran against him.
David, you agree? It makes sense to you?
Maybe rivals. The question is team. Will they work together? Hillary Clinton has all the things so far that we've seen in Obama appointees. She served in the first Clinton administration or in the Clinton administration. She went to either Harvard or Yale Law School. And she supported the Iraq War. So they all seem to have that in common. But they have something else in common, and she has something else in common with a lot of the other people she's been appointed, which is broad respect from Republicans and Democrats. I think in general the appointees have been outstanding. And on foreign affairs in particular, Republican senators as well as Democratic senators took a look at how Senator Clinton then dealt with foreign affairs, and they admired the way she did it. So she will come in, I think, especially on foreign policy, with a great deal of support from both sides.
And there are two very popular names around the world. One is Obama and the other is Clinton. And I think this is a very powerful ticket, if you will, to present to the world.
David, you write very glowingly of the Obama team in today's New York Times. You say this is a team that looks like America, or that part of America that got 800 on both their SATs.
Yes, they all have gone to Harvard and Yale, it seems. EJ would be undereducated in this group. My line was that if someone attacks this country during the Harvard-Yale game, we're in big trouble because they're all going to be there. But it is a very impressive group, and I would say, just to generalize about them, they tend to be Washington insiders, but they also tend to be very change-oriented. They also tend to be very evidence-based. So even if you disagree with them, they are people you can talk to and who Republicans can respect. And I think that includes Geithner. I think it includes the supposed budget director, Peter Orszag. It even includes Clinton on foreign affairs.
You know, what strikes me is David has emphasized the education levels and the fact that they're pragmatic. And they are that, and evidence-based. But on the whole, many of these people are also very progressive. Somebody like Peter Orszag is a kind of progressive pragmatist. Tom Daschle, who is being talked about as HHS secretary, that was a very strong signal that Obama really wants to do health care reform. Geithner is fascinating because it seemed to be a competition between Larry Summers, mm-hmm. his mentor, and Tim Geithner. It's hard to find anyone, at least I haven't found anyone, who says a bad word about him. He is exactly as Scott described him. His reputation is, I think he's got an advantage and a disadvantage that are all the same, which is he did work with the current Treasury Secretary on this rescue package. Now, that may be a disadvantage as problems with that package emerge, but to the extent that this needs to be reworked and perhaps we need to act between now and Inauguration Day, Geithner may be the guy who could get it done. He desperately needed a Treasury Secretary quickly as this economy sank further.
As our Mara Liasson reported here this week, the Obama team is hearing, getting a lot of advice from outside, from people like the journalist and author Jonathan Alter calling for a new deal, and people like the ex-Clinton aide Elaine Kmark saying that Obama should first rebuild trust in government before he moves on to big systemic changes in, say, healthcare, energy. I'd like to hear with the two of you, first we'll start with David, where do you fall out on the questions of how much change and how fast?
I'm on the Kmark side. I think the point that Elaine makes and Bill Galston has made is that LBJ and FDR could count on a certain trust in government, a trust that doesn't exist, and you have to rebuild it. And among people in the Obama camp that I've spoken to, the go slow approach would be a two-stage approach. You get in, you do a stimulus package, you do an energy package, and then later you do the health care. I just think to do health care, which is so phenomenally difficult, and energy and taxes all at once, there are only 24 hours in a day. I just think it's physically impossible to do all that within a brief period of a few months.
EJ?
You know, people are saying, yes, it is 32. No, it isn't 32. And I was saying, let's compromise at 1944 or something. I think that there is an urgent need to do a number of things quickly. We forget that FDR did not get everything done himself in the first 100 days. In fact, there was later a second 100 days. And so I think he does have to be bold. In that sense, I'm on the 1932 side. But there's a paradox about government. People want government to be more active, but they are also don't fully trust it yet. Maybe it's not a paradox. Maybe it's a riddle, and that's the riddle he's got to solve.
This is what I was going to ask David. I mean, wouldn't trust in government arise from the government actually doing things that show that life is better as a result of government
right.
doing something.
I think that's the Kmark Alston case, that if you do a stimulus package and it seems to have an effect, unlike the current stimulus packages, then...
Of course, that is the risk with stimulus packages.
Right. That would make people a little more welcome. And the other argument I would think, and I say this with some regret, is that I don't think the Republican Party is coming back anytime soon. So I do think you have a case, and the more important thing is to do it right. Healthcare, phenomenally complicated. We haven't had an energy package in 30 years, a really effective one, for a good reason. Phenomenally complicated. Take the time and do it right.
I think the problem with this argument is that there's bold is different from reckless. You don't want the president to be reckless, but I think he can and has to be bold, both given the problems he has and the opportunity he's been presented. Obama did not run on nothing. He actually ran on a rather specific set of promises. They're bold, but I think they're popular. And so I think he does have to use not just the first 100 days, but the first year.
EJ, I want to hear you on what David just said. The Republicans, you think, aren't coming back anytime soon. 2 years ago, they lose seats in the Congress. This year, they lose seats in the Congress and the White House. You think that they hit the canvas, they're counted out, and now they're tossed out of the ring 2 years from now? Or isn't there some natural comeback for the Republican Party?
Well, there's a natural comeback. The question is whether it's in 2 or 4 years or 10 or 15 years. And I think the first answer to that is how well does Obama do? I mean, if we are in deep trouble 4 years from now, the Republicans, even if they don't do anything smart, will have a chance for a comeback. But I think unless they fundamentally rethink conservatism and present themselves as a more moderately conservative party and accept the fact that they're going to run a big government whether they like it or not, they are going to be in the wilderness for a much longer time.
That's your kind of party, a big government conservative party.
Well, don't insult me here, Robert. I like to think a Hamiltonian limited but energetic government. Look, the basic fact
thin
is
veneer.
25% of the Democrats have an advantage on issue after issue by 25 percentage points. Republicans got to turn that around.
David Brooks of the New York Times, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post. Thanks to both of you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you.